it loud.
I really don't understand your question. I don't know if I can't hear or you guys can't talk in the mic or whatever.
Get crazy.
You go find them, you throw your arms around them, you give them a big kiss on the mouth if you're a girl.
Get nuts.
Get up, baby. Get up. Oh, yeah, it's gone.
It's the Cube Show.
Mr. All Born Radio.
I'm a good person.
Man, y'all take it easy down there on the off, baby.
God wants us to win the World Championship.
You're doing it wrong. You're doing the wrong things.
Is anybody else tired or is it just me?
Hey, legitimate question, though.
Okay.
I'm drunk right now.
Wow.
Another one!
I?
And now, Cole Kublick.
He is bad Auburn man.
Welcome back in, Cube Show, Sports Radio, 730 and 103.9 The Ump. Listen online, umpsports.com. You can download the app in your app store, iPhone or Android. Search WUMP and download it for free. Don't forget about our friends at Valley Equipment Rental before we move forward with Kevin McAlpin to talk Atlanta Braves. Go to valleyequipmentrents.com or call 256-964-6081. The John Deere Bulldozer's in now, 450K. 80 horsepower. The thing's 18,700 pounds. For all your big jobs, it can get it done. Pressure washers. There's a new tow behind pressure washer. They've got hot and cold water pressure washers, the riding troll machine, cultivating tiller, front tine, mid tine, stump grinders, and more. Go to Valley Equipment Rental right there on South Memorial Parkway. Ross and Tanner, the guys, are going to help get you in the best product for your project, whether it's a construction site or just something quick in the backyard. 256-964-6081. Call Valley Equipment Rental today. Kevin McAlpin with us to talk some Atlanta Braves and Major League Baseball now. Kevin, good morning. How you doing?
Guys, I'm well. How are you?
Shutout. We're doing well. Thank you. Shutout for the Braves last night, 8-0 over the Nationals. Julio Teheran climbs to 500, 11-11 on the season. How misleading is his overall record based on his performance, in your opinion, this year?
Well, lately it's more in, you know, reflective of how he's pitched. Look, his first 4 months of the season were really, really disappointing, and he'll be the first to tell you that. He struggled at home. His numbers were really good on the road, but even the home runs that he was giving up at home, they started creeping into some of those road stats. So 11-11 may not sound terribly impressive when you think about it, but I think the way he's throwing lately, it's a little deceiving for how well he's been in his last 5 or 6 starts. He told me after that outing in Denver a few weeks ago that the old Julio Teheran was back and that he felt like adjustments that he had made, especially on his slider, were really going to pay off for him as he went forward. And that's exactly what we've seen. He's dialed the slider back a little bit. We saw some 94s and 95s on the fastball last night, guys. I can't remember the last time we saw that kind of velo from Julio. So I think that he's out there, he's airing it out in the final couple starts of the year, and it's really encouraging the way he's kind of made a turn here and finishing this season out on a high note.
8-2 on the road this season. In fact, he's undefeated in D.C. He kind of loves playing in Nationals Park, doesn't he?
Yeah, that's impressive. You know, 3 starts here, he's 3-0 with about an ERA of, 0.65, if I'm recalling correctly. So he has done a really nice job here in Washington. I think he kind of gets a little more amped up when he faces a team like the Nationals, who clinched the division on Sunday. So he did a really nice job. He didn't have a whole lot of stressful innings either. And I think that's been the big thing for him. Walks have really plagued Julio this season, and he's done a nice job here lately of kind of dialing it in, throwing more strikes, working ahead in the count. And, he's done a really good job on the road, especially here in the nation's capital.
Kevin McAlpin with us talking Atlanta Braves baseball. I can remember a while back when the Nationals suffered a few injuries and had some key losses. We asked you if that was, in your opinion, enough to sort of take them out of being a real contender in the postseason. Having seen them get shut out last night, what are your thoughts on Washington heading into October?
Well, I still think they're a really talented ball club. There's some questions with this team. And look, if you're looking at other contenders around the game, I mean, this is a team all of a sudden that only is a handful of games behind the Dodgers for the best record in the NL. And Los Angeles really scuffled in the last couple of weeks, has kind of opened the door for Washington to have a chance at least at clinching home field advantage. But, you know, the fact that they've done this without Bryce Harper, they've had some injuries in the pitching staff. The bullpen for the Nationals in the first couple of months of the season was a disaster. I think they've done a good job of shoring that up. But when you look at all the teams in the NL, I still think that, you know, I would take my chances with the Dodgers, with the Cubs. And if they have to run into Arizona, say, in the first round of the postseason, that could be a really tough matchup as well. So I think that they're a talented ball club. I think it speaks, you know, to volumes to the depth the organization has, that they can lose their big prized offseason acquisition in Adam Eaton for the year and still be able to find guys like Turner and Defoe and other guys to fill in there. And then, you know, they've been without Bryce Harper now for a month, and then they've continued to win ball games without him. So, you know, again, when you get to the playoffs, momentum is huge. And I think for the Nationals, if you're a fan of this team, you'd like to see them keep the foot on the gas and really continue to play good baseball as you get to October. You'd rather be in their shoes than, say, Los Angeles' shoes, where you're kind of limping into the postseason.
If you're a fan of the Braves, which we all are, the Braves and Nationals on the air at 5:50 tonight right here on the Ump, this season, as far as the playoffs, is a loss, but you look forward to the end of this season, what some of these players are going to end the season with, and next year, as Major League Baseball has announced the schedule for 2018 already. And bad news for the Braves, because they open up with the Phillies. I mean, that's not a good matchup from this year, at least.
No, but you turn the page and you get a chance to start fresh with them next year. It's like, I think a quarter of the Phillies' wins on the entire season have come against the Braves. They have had the Braves' number this year, and that's been one of those ones. It's really, really hard to explain why the Phillies have played so well against the Braves. And talking about the schedule, how about March 29th, opening day? It's the earliest opening day that Major League Baseball has ever had. And it's really bizarre, guys, when you think about sports. Baseball, Major League Baseball, is the only sport where you actually can start planning for next season before this season even ends. It's really weird when you think about the NHL, the NFL, and the NBA. Their schedules all come out throughout the course of the offseason, but you still have 20 games left in this year, and we're already looking ahead to next year. And I'll be honest, I already looked ahead to where the days off were on the road, because that's one of the fun parts of the job, is seeing where we get a free day off on the road. And we already have one in Los Angeles, so I'm not going to turn that one down.
Great stuff, Kevin. Always appreciate your insight on the Atlanta Braves. Look forward to catching up next week.
You got it. Thanks, fellas.
Kevin McAlpin of the Braves Radio Network. At Kevin McAlpin via Twitter. Can follow him there. A couple baseball notes quickly. Dodgers snap an 11-game losing streak last night, so they might be potentially bouncing back to being that World Series favorite heading into the postseason.
What's the playoff spot with that win, too?
And Cleveland,
not the
Indians,
division yet, but
20 straight wins.
That's in a row.
That's insane.
Yep, tied American League record with the 0-2 Athletics.
Only 24,000 in attendance last night.
Listen, they care.
It's a Tuesday night regular season game. People are mad at that.
It just means more.
It's a Tuesday night regular season baseball game. I understand they're going for 20 in a row, but just calm down.
They have an afternoon game today going for 21. Probably don't get more than 20-plus thousand people there today. it's time for the phone restore call day. By the way, our Yankees are 4 games back, but almost assured at this point of a playoff spot. Time for our phone restore call of the day, brought to you by good friends at Phone Restore. Check them out, phonerestore.com.
By the way,
900 ball balls.
You Saturday. Mentioned going for 21 wins. They've got Buck Farmer today on the mound.
Oh, man. Who Can gives they? A buck? You know what I mean?
Whoa.
What's a Buck Farmer, by the way?
I don't know.
That's a good baseball name. A Buck Farmer. Yesterday, Mike Leach did a little bit of talkie, and we like Mike Leach because he's crazy.
Always entertaining, yeah.
Yep, he is insane. We talked to him at SEC Media Days a couple years ago when he didn't have a job, right?
Yeah, it went straight into aliens.
So went straight into aliens. I think he had some dip in his mouth.
And in the cup that he was carrying around.
So, God bless Mike Leach. But Mike Leach...
A lot of it.
Had to have his team come back from 21 down in the fourth quarter to beat Boise State on Saturday night. A game I fell asleep to, and it was 31-17. Thought it was over. That was not the case. And he's not a fan of how his offensive line played. In fact, well, let's just let him describe a scenario.
What in particular was the Boise defensive line doing to give the O-line so much trouble?
Lining up and just whipping them. Okay, so like if you were ever in a fight to handicap, you know, would any one of our offensive linemen, so pick whoever you think our best offensive lineman is. Okay, if there was a fight to the death and you were to clean out this room and there were no rules whatsoever to be applied, so you pick out whoever happens to be your favorite of our offensive linemen, whoever you think's the toughest.
Cody O'Connell.
Now, whoever's the softest of that Boise State D-line, you bring him in here, okay? And all that's going to be left of our offensive lineman is a grease spot in the end, okay? Because that Boise State D-lineman will smoke our offensive lineman so bad, it'll be embarrassing. And if you don't believe me, just turn on that game the other night, and you'll see exactly what I'm talking about.
Okay, that feels a little harsh. Take our best guy and their worst guy, and our best guy will get smoked.
Now, I told you that one time when I was at Auburn that Hugh Nall had us fight each other. No rules. Anything goes.
Is this what happened?
One-on-one, mano-a-mano. We didn't do it in a room. We did it on the practice field. But, yeah, there were no grease spots left. By the way, is he calling his offensive line greasy?
that sounds gross. A little, hey, guys, shower every now and then.
yeah, obviously trying to send a message that he wants the O-line to play better. But.
You're not responding that well to that, though.
No. I'd like it if one of those offensive linemen said, what if you and I were locked in a room together fighting to the death? Who would win that one, Coach?
Hey, who's this?
Would you like to see how that one played out? I would like to see that. I would like to see 340-pound Cody O'Connell versus Mike Leach in a battle to the death. And that's kind of the deal with some of these coaches when they make these statements like this, is they don't really have anything to answer to. They don't have to back up anything that they say about their kids like that. So it's it's just kind of one of those things that the coaches are going to do what they're going to do, say what they're going to say. They're going to be, you know, the guy who they think they can just go around and trash their players and talk bad about their players, and no repercussions coming their way. So they're not going to have to worry about anything. All right, before we move into 10 after tweets, we get to them 10 after every hour, 6 to 10 a.m. weekday mornings. You can tweet in at Cube Show, at Cole Kubrick, at Arkishe, at Sports. Best way to be a part of the show, let's get to them now, brought to you by 1FMC.com.
Bring me the tweets!
Hey, quick aside. Just got a phone call about this. Some people listen to us on apps that aren't our own app, and sometimes they have technical difficulties. Don't listen to other people's apps. Get the UMP Sports app, UMP Sports. Just search for it.
It's easy.
It's free. It goes straight to us. Because if other apps have problems, we can't fix it. We can fix our own problems. So download our app. And if you normally, some people, the guy who just called me, say he listens on the TV by putting his app on the TV. Like I can do that with my Roku and all. Don't do that. Just download our app. It's free. It goes straight to us.
T Bird at TideFan2164 tweets at Cube Show that armadillo is a hashtag savage.
Ooh, yeah.
Emoticon sunglasses on, smiley face.
Savage Dilla. Yeah.
Ross Twing tweets at Cube Show, since Florida canceled the game last week, does that mean their suspended players are suspended for the Tennessee game?
Ah, interesting.
I haven't
point.
Heard an update on this.
Interesting point.
I would assume they're all still out.
Because
we haven't heard a resolution to the situation that got them in trouble, I would assume they're all still out.
I saw a report that said that sources were telling this local reporter that they would be very surprised if this investigation wrapped up before the game, but it's not completely out of the question.
Chris Crow tweets, how big are the magnifying glasses used to find the insect balls?
Well,
they're available in the store. You don't see them on the shelf.
You don't have to have like a giant magnifying glass to see. You'd have to have a strong one.
Uh-huh.
No, they're right there.
Bama Muscle 63 tweets, what's up with coaches and dip?
I think it sort of acts as like, well, I think it calms them down. Like, it chills you out a little bit. I mean, isn't that what nicotine is, a suppressant? So.
I have to go back and think.
I think
nicotine is supposed to be like a.
It's not an like upper. It can't be an upper.
It's supposed to be like an upper. That's why people, like, use it to. It
gives you a buzz.
To get rid of your old smoking habits.
No.
I mean, not eating habits.
If you have a nicotine addiction, yeah.
Eating habit. Mm-hmm. That's why you have a little bit of a cigarette in your mouth. Dig it.
Ray Sively also tweets in, that armadillo was such a savage.
Uh-huh.
Oh, my God.
At this point, I don't care if you guys like this impression or not. It's going on forever.
You keep tweeting in savage, you're going to get it.
Uh-huh. Yo.
Chris Crow tweets, the reason I like Romo's commentary is because I felt like he was explaining sometimes why he thought plays were going certain ways. I didn't see that part, but they just showed the clips of him guessing which way the plays were going before the ball was snapped. That's all I saw.
Hey, this tweet comes from our good friend Ross, who tweets in, new soundbite, Archie Shea. I said what I said.
I said what I said.
True. This is actually accurate.
Quote, Cole Kublik was busting bars with that Bell song.
Hey, you can sing that Le'Veon Bell camp song all you want. He's here. We're working.
Let's sing the song.
I said what I said.
Yeah. Le'Veon. Where,
here we go.
Where Le'Veon were you when we needed camp. You?
Le'Veon Bell is back in camp. Here
almost
we
cost
go.
Us. The Cleveland game almost cost us.
Charles Kramer tweets in, Antonio Cromartie's sperm can play tailback for the half, for half the NFL. Arizona Cards should sign him, maybe even play Auburn QB position.
Oh, hey, listen. Hey, it's strong, though. It is indefensible that Antonio Cromartie has had three kids since having his snip-snap.
How long until we see that armadillo playing DB at Bama?
Uh-huh. Thinking about Colorado State, brother.
He's the next one up, isn't he?
Next Savage up.
We got multiple people tweeting in.
I said what I said.
Mm-hmm.
Go Gators tweets at Cole Kublik. Does McElwain need to take over Gators play calling, or is it more on the players? It's been one game.
I swear to God, I heard someone say this.
It's been a single game.
I heard someone say this on this station. That if Jim McElwain loses to Tennessee this weekend, that he should be on the hot seat. Jim McElwain has won two consecutive division championships. And if he loses to Tennessee, that they should be on the hot seat? I think they were interviewing somebody. I couldn't remember.
This is where we are. This is where we are now.
Like, I turned on the radio when I got in the car, and I heard that sentence, literally like the first sentence I heard. And then I turned it off again. I was like, I can't handle the hot takes. It's too hot. Hot takes.
When we come back, we'll ask Booger McFarland if he's a savage right after this. All right, welcome back in Cube Show. Booger McFarland of ESPN and ABC, college football analyst, joins us every week. Thanks to our friends at Hover Helmets. Go to hoverhelmets.com. Good morning, Boog. How are you?
Top of the morning, Cole. What's up, buddy?
Not much. Who's the best team in college football?
Through 2 weeks, I think you'd have to say it's Alabama. I think you'd also have to follow them up with Oklahoma based on their performance and having the second best win of the season. So I would say those two.
You think that Florida State win is better than Oklahoma going on the road to beat Ohio State?
Yeah, because it's the opening week. You don't kind of, you know, it's early. You don't really know what you have. You make your biggest improvement in football, I've always found out, from game one to game two. So, yeah, I would definitely say it would be Alabama beating Florida State week one.
If you truly believe that the biggest improvement in your team should or does come between week one and two, what does that tell you about what you saw with the Auburn Tigers?
Well, I think with the Auburn Tigers, you have to first and foremost look at the positives. Number one, the defense played outstanding again, and they've been doing that consistently for a while. Yeah, they gave up a couple of runs, but no defense is going to be perfect. To limit that offense to 14 points was absolutely tremendous. I think the issue comes on offense where whether it's Chip Lindsey's offense, whether it's Gus Malzahn's offense, it ain't working. So we can blame whoever. The bottom line is it's not working. And you can put them in the press box. You can put them on top of the stadium. It doesn't matter. When you're calling plays that your offensive line is getting whipped at the line of scrimmage on, when you're calling plays that are not getting guys open, it's a problem. And I think offensively, that's the issue. And for a coach who made himself out to be an offensive genius, that's the biggest problem that Gus Malzahn has. And I think at some point, Cole, and I don't know if you agree with me, the defense is playing good enough. The offense is really, really something that struggled. And Jarrett Stidham coming in hasn't really changed that. He hasn't changed the play calling. And maybe they don't have enough receivers to get the football down the field. But the Auburn offense was really just kind of stagnant. It was in a box. They didn't open the offense up. And if you're going to have a quarterback that can throw the football down the field, why not do that?
Yeah, it's a solid point. I thought the route selection based on the coverage they were seeing didn't help much either. And there are a lot of places in that game I think we could point the finger at offensively as to why they were struggling. Booger McFarland with us of ESPN and ABC, college football analyst, brought to you by Hover Helmets each week. I did want to go back and just ask you. You said you think Alabama's the number one team in the nation. What do you feel about their defensive line and what you've seen the first 2 weeks? There are a lot of new faces there. Can they be a dominant defensive line this year in college football?
They don't have to be. What they have to be is what they've always been, which is fundamentally sound, not able to run against. They'll create pressure. You know, Alabama's defensive line was dominant, not only because you couldn't run against them last year, but because they got one-on-one pressure. Well, this defensive line may not get that, but guess what? Jeremy will figure out a way to scheme it up, and they'll blitz him. So, I mean, Alabama's defensive line is good enough because if those guys will just stop the run, which you name me an Alabama team that hasn't stopped the run, and I'll sit here and wait for a couple of hours because they always stop the run, and I think they'll be as good as ever.
Booger McFarland of ESPN and ABC with us talking college football. Had a chance to see your former team, the LSU Tigers, over the weekend. Boy, there's so much talent, especially on the back end of that defense, and they're going to get Arden Key back this week. You look at a couple other guys that have been banged up, going to be back to play this week. What are your thoughts of that LSU-Mississippi State game Saturday night?
Well, if LSU's not ready, they're going to get beat. And I say that very sincerely because Mississippi State is a physical football team on defense this year. If you watch the tape, they may not be the most talented bunch, but Todd Grantham has those guys flying around playing physical. When I was down there in the spring, he said, you know what? Regardless of talent, you play with energy and effort on defense. Well, they're doing that. And I think if LSU comes in there and they're not physical and they can't match that intensity that they're going to see in Starkville, they could have issues. And Nick Fitzgerald is good enough by himself to put up some points on the board because he's a dual-threat quarterback. And I think a lot of people don't understand that. I was talking to one pro scout who says, and I quote, every time I watch him, I fall in love with him even more. And that's saying a lot because nobody ever talks about Nick Fitzgerald as a potential pro quarterback, but there are pro scouts that actually love his skill set right now. So LSU's the more talented team, but by no stretch of the imagination are they unbeatable in Starkville.
I said yesterday that I think the matchup that probably decides that game is a young – but super fast, super athletic, unbelievably talented LSU secondary against Fitzgerald, somebody who still can be a bit of a risk taker at times, but can also give you those explosive plays. Maybe who can avoid the most mistakes there decides that game?
Yes. I think ultimately LSU on the road, what they're going to do is they're going to come out offensively and try to run the football with guys. They're not going to try to make mistakes, which is what you should do. When you go on the road, you want to try to take the crowd out. How do you do that? You run the football. You hit your opponent in the mouth. On the other side, Mississippi State's going to try to tempo it up a little bit. They're going to try to get Fitzy moving around and get him to make some plays and bring it back to your point about when he takes some risks, down the field, the LSU secondary will have some opportunity to get some picks, and the Mississippi State receivers have an opportunity to make some plays.
Bud, great stuff. Always appreciate it. Look forward to catching up again next week.
I appreciate it, man. Thanks, Bud.
Booger McFarland of ESPN and ABC, college football analyst, joins us usually Tuesday. Thanks to our friends at Hover Helmets. Go to hoverhelmets.com today. Use promo code CUBE, C-U-B-E. Save 20% and get free shipping. That's hoverhelmets.com, at Hover Helmets via Twitter and Instagram.
You know, Boog's rarely off base when he discusses anything really college football related. But. You know, I'm curious when he talks about Auburn and the talent that they have at receiver. He just sort of postulated, is there enough receiver talent at Auburn to be able to make a difference, to be able to be the difference down the field? I think there is. I don't think talent's the problem at Auburn. I think this Auburn team is as good as they've been talent-wise since 2004, top to bottom. I think they are poised to be able to try to make a run. But when you look at what is keeping them from that, it's the other things. We're going to hear from Gus Malzahn coming up in a little bit about the changes that he's deciding to make to try to help this team get better. He's promising the fans, we're going to get better on offense. I guarantee you that. I promise you that. I mean, we've seen nothing so far in the first 2 weeks to say that A, it's different, and B, it's going to be a really good offense. And this Auburn team's still going to be a 7-8 win team, probably, hopefully, with the way this offense is playing against bad teams, because there are enough bad teams to sort of get some lunch on. But when it comes to sort of those middle-of-the-road teams, like the games that can go either way, like Mississippi State, you know, even for Auburn, Arkansas, where's this team going to be?
Yeah, it's I just don't know what to make of this, and then we're going to get to this again a little later in the show, but Malzahn announcing yesterday Herb Hamm will come out of the box down to field level. Chip Lindsey goes to the box. And I think there are a lot of different thoughts, ideas, theories, conspiracy theories as to why this is happening that you could drum up. Some positive, some negative, if you're an Auburn fan. I mean, there are things that that could and should be very concerning as to why this move is being made. There are things that, if it works out a different way, could be very positive as to why this move is being made. I mean, maybe Chip Lindsey always wanted to be up there, and now he's truly going to be under control. And this is a way for him to truly have his deal. Is this possibly a way for Malzahn to disguise, you know, is Malzahn potentially thinking people are on to him, calling plays, calling formations, taking over on the sideline, and this is a way for him to sort of get away from that, thinking that, well, if you see me doing something on the sidelines, I'm getting it from Chip. He's in the booth. He sends it to me. I send it in.
Right.
It could go either direction, and we won't really know. We don't know. There's no way to know.
And we won't. We can,
because no one can point a finger at Malzahn now and say, look what he's doing on the sideline, look what he's doing. Right. Because he can just say, well, I'm a direct line from Chip to our offense.
Look what he's saying on the side. Read his lips. He's calling formations. That's what a coach that's in charge of his offense does. Guys, look at this. But we will know a little bit more with the Mercer game. We won't know a lot, but we'll know a little bit more about how the offense maybe has adjusted as far as, like you talk about, the route tree and how much more creative that they get there. They won't have to be that much more creative against Mercer. But then, talk about the next week. We start figuring out stuff about Auburn. And we could know in 2, maybe 3 weeks if this team is heading towards a new coach.
Wow, you're just throwing that out there.
Well, if this offense doesn't change, if it doesn't adjust, if plays don't start being made, I mean, all of this is not off the players. I'm not. I don't want to sit there and say this is all Gus Malzahn, Chip Lindsey's doing. Some of these guys have got to block one on one. Some of these guys have got to make catches. Some of these guys have got to do a little bit better effort wise in certain positions.
I mean, but do you let a
Jarrett
decision
got to throw? If he's going to throw the back shoulder fade, he's got to throw it correctly.
Do you let a decision like that maybe take place a little bit earlier if you don't see any changes on offense? If you don't see any difference, because then, I mean, realistically, you could sit back and say, we were promised a bill of goods that things were going to change, things were going to be different. They're not. Therefore, the program's not moving forward. And if you got another guy who can call plays that's sitting there, and the only way you're truly going to be able to allow him to call plays is if the guy who's preventing it's not there, do you look at making an early season move? Is it worth it?
I don't think it's worth it. Because I don't think if Jay Jacobs is making the call, I don't think Jay is firing anybody in October. I don't think it comes until maybe after the Georgia game. It probably won't come until after the season anyway. Because you still have plenty of time to go after whatever coach you want to go after, and trying to go after him in September or October is no thing. You know, I mean, the race doesn't really heat up until everybody's desperate, and then you see all the openings that are out there. I mean, the only candidate I think anybody would be even interested in discussing would be Chip Kelly at this point because he doesn't have a job.
No.
Because he's not. No, I'm not thinking that's the best case. But as far as guys that you can talk about publicly or openly and people would banty about would be Chip Kelly only because he doesn't have a job right now. There could be many other names that either open up, show interest toward the end of the season, depending on how their team goes, or if the you know, the seat gets a little too warm. Or listen, Jay Jacobs may not end up being the guy to make the decision anyway.
That's another wild card in the whole thing, I guess.
For Auburn, it's still a wild way, and I'm not calling for Gus Malzahn's job yet, but you know, there's only so many times you can beat your head against a rock before you either expect your skull or the rock to crack. More likely, your skull's going to crack.
All right, we will get to a break. It's just your last chance to send in your call for the Cube Show College Football Playoff Committee.
Oh, yeah.
Your four teams if the college football playoff began today. 1 through 4, send us your teams. Who are they? We need to know. And before we know, you need to know about Dreamland Barbecue. Go to dreamlandbbq.com. If you're looking for help with your tailgate this season, dreamlandbbq.com. You can have ribs or sauce shipped anywhere. Call 1-800-752-0544. 1-800-752-0544. Tomorrow, you'll be able to guess which SEC team has the most rushing yards over the weekend. Chance to win a $25 gift certificate to Dreamland Barbecue. But today, stop by the location on Jordan Lane or on University right near Jordan Lane. Grab some ribs, chicken, wangs, nachos for lunch. Do it up big because there ain't nothing like them nowhere. Dreamland Barbecue, dreamlandbbq.com. We're back with our top four if the college football playoff began today after this.
Cole, it's our favorite time of the week. It is time to get to the college football playoff top four. The college football playoff started today. So thank you guys for the committee, all of you guys getting your picks in for your top four. You can start doing that as early as Saturday night once the games are over. If you feel that confident, if you don't need any extra time on Sunday to look at the tape. You know, some of our listeners like to look at the game film to make sure.
Yeah, go back and study it up.
That they're comfortable with the picks they're going to make. But if you're comfortable with Saturday, you can start tweeting those in. You can text those in to 910-663-5663. By the way, coming up, a chance to win Hal Sparks tickets for Stand Up Live for Thursday night right after we do this. So be listening in. A chance to text in to win Hal Sparks tickets at Stand Up Live this weekend. So, Mr. Cole Kowalik, a lot of stuff happening over the weekend.
Yeah, a lot of changes.
Let's find out.
Now it's time for Cole and Aki's totally irrelevant college football playoff top four. If the college football playoff started today.
Yes, sir. So last week, let's start with Cole Kubrick because he had the most damage done to his top four last week. Cole, last week you told us your top four were in particular order. Alabama 1, Ohio State 2, Clemson 3, Stanford 4. So, Mr. Kubelik, have you made any adjustments to your top four this week?
Just a little. Just a few. I'm going to go Oklahoma number 1.
Brand new number 1 for Oklahoma.
I disagree with Boog that Alabama's win was more impressive, mainly just because it was on a neutral site. I think as far as quality opponents, they're close. But because Oklahoma was able to go on the road, and week two is still very early, and get that win in the fashion that they did, I'll give Oklahoma a bit of a nudge over Alabama. Alabama's coming in number 2.
Oh, man.
So it's not like I'm really bumping them back very far.
Impressive enough against Fresno State?
They were fine
did
against
you need
Fresno
to see more
State.
Down the field throwing
some of the injuries.
Attack of a Lola.
Some of the injuries have impacted how I feel about that team. Number 3, I'll keep Clemson at 3. A nice win against an SEC opponent that we now have some real questions about at home, but we're more than dominant up front on defense. Overall, the defense looked great. Offensively, I think you still have a few questions about Clemson, but in reality, that's a football team that's done exactly what they need to do. And then I've got Michigan 4. And I think you just look at the schedules at this point, and I think you can only really take the quality of wins that you have.
Sure.
Now, you know, Penn State is a team that looks like they could potentially be there, but, I mean, Akron and Pitt, I don't really view those wins as good as I do the Florida win for Michigan at a neutral site and then Cincinnati, which I'm not bragging on the Cincinnati win, but they got the Florida win. USC still struggled with Central Michigan. It's a nice win against Stanford. It's at home, but they still struggled with Western Michigan, excuse me, week one. So I'm not as sold on USC as I am maybe Michigan or Penn State. I think Penn State would probably be my next team in as well, just because of how good Saquon Barkley's look. So,
okay.
And I have a little more confidence in their coaching staff than I do USC's. But
so you have number one, Oklahoma.
Correct.
Number two, Alabama.
Correct.
Number three, Clemson.
Correct.
And number four, hail to the victors.
Correct.
Michigan. Well, very, very intriguing. So last week, Cole, at Alabama 1, Penn State 2, Clemson 3, Oklahoma State 4. This week, I have to start.
Roll Tide.
Number 1, Alabama. Alabama, number 1, didn't do much to dissuade me from being the number 1 team. Their win wasn't as impressive as far as the quality of opponent, but the score margin was. So I keep Alabama number 1 for a reason. Number 2, moving up a spot, Clemson. Clemson moves up, beating a top 15 Auburn team. You only beat them what they're ranked at the time. I hate this at the end of the year bull crap we have to deal with every year. What are they ranked at the end of the year? Doesn't matter. It's what they're ranked when you play them.
No, it's not.
It is what they're, because you don't play, Auburn doesn't get to play the November 17th Clemson team. They get to play the September 9th Clemson team. People. Number 3, Penn State. I dropped Penn State 1, not because of the quality of the win, just because Pittsburgh's a good win. And it is just like beating Akron to them.
Well, not a bad
They're
win.
Used to it.
It's, yeah.
But
I guess James Franklin didn't take that in consideration, that kind of works against him.
But Penn State only drops down 1 because Clemson's win was so impressive because of how they did it and who they did it against. And, hey, let's just say this. If Auburn ends up being a top-10 team at the end of the year and their offense is rolling, it's just going to make this win look like maybe Clemson's defense was just otherworldly monsters. Probably won't be the complete case. But regardless, and the number 4 team in the country, I have the Oklahoma Sooners. Boomer Sooner gets up to number 4. They replace and supplant their rival, Oklahoma State. I call Texas not the rival in this scenario. Oklahoma State, their in-state rival, because of, obviously, the planting of the flag, kind of, sort of.
You gave them extra credit for that.
Well, I feel like, and by the way, when Baker Mayfield apologized yesterday, I don't know if you saw this part. I think it was on Monday he apologized, and we played it Tuesday morning. There were some people saying, hey, this is just a passionate moment. It was just a spur-of-the-moment kind of thing. And I say no. Do you know why I say it wasn't just a spur-of-the-moment thing? He had to go to the other side of the field to get the flag and then bring it all the way back to midfield in the shoe and then wave it and then plant it. A little bit of thought was into what he was going to do. So Oklahoma number 4. So I have Alabama 1, Clemson 2, Penn State 3, Oklahoma 4. Now, Mr. Kublik, it's time to hear what the Cube Show College Football Playoff Committee thought the top 4 should be.
Yeah.
First, a recap from last week. Number 1 was Alabama. Number 2, Ohio State. This may change. Number 3, Clemson. And number 4, Penn State. So let's take a look at what the committee thought it was this week. The number 1 team in the country, Cole, according to the College Football Playoff Committee of the Cube Show.
It's like we can skip this every week, but if you need to say it, you can.
You don't think it would change?
No.
You're right, it's Alabama.
Yeah.
It's Alabama. Alabama's number 1 for the 1,700th consecutive week.
I'd like to see if we did like the AP poll, if we had 111 votes in, 111 votes were probably for Alabama.
It was not unanimous.
Oh.
I will tell you this, Oklahoma got a bunch of first place
votes. Wow. But what are you guys doing?
Alabama did pull away at the end.
That's savagery.
Oh, yeah, brother. Oh, yeah. Number 2, Oklahoma. Oklahoma, in fact, when I went back and looked at the votes, the first 7 ballots that were in had Oklahoma number 1 or 2. And then Alabama,
those guys were just anxious trying to get Bama out of the top spot.
And then Alabama went a run on number 1s right after that to take over first place. So number 2 is Oklahoma. Number 3, staying number 3, is Clemson. Our committee says that's a fine win, fellas, but that doesn't impress us as much as what Oklahoma did and what Alabama clearly did. Our committee clearly is taking the stance of to replace us, you got to beat us. And ain't nobody beat us yet, except for January. And the number four team in the country, according to the Cube Show College Football Playoff Committee, is USC. USC number four.
Not surprised.
That win over Stanford was impressive. 18 points is a big margin for a team that looked really good. Week one, and Bryce Love still had a pretty good game. But
there's a giant facet of the media that is beyond obsessed with that football team, so I'm not surprised.
Listen, they ran for 300-plus yards against Stanford.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive.
And I told you after the Rice game that I'm regretting my Stanford pick to the playoff because the front seven looks so slow and unathletic. So.
Well, that's one in the world
now. Now you see.
USC number four. So the Cube Show College Football Playoff Committee has Bama 1, Oklahoma 2, Clemson 3, USC 4. Yeah, you want to hear the other votes?
That's usually the best part of the week.
Well, yeah, Alabama 1, Oklahoma 2, Clemson 3, USC 4. Penn State was number 5. Penn State just missing out by one vote.
First team out.
By one vote is Penn State. Oklahoma State right behind them. But actually a pretty good fall down to get to Oklahoma State. LSU got votes to be in the college football playoff top four. And only one other team got votes this week. Michigan. Michigan got one single vote.
Wow.
And it wasn't Cole. I looked back. It was not Cole who tweeted in, hey, give me Michigan. No, it was...
I just think at this point in the season, you have to go with who has... When you're talking about Michigan, Penn State, USC, I clearly think Oklahoma and Alabama right now are a little ahead of everyone else. Clemson, those teams, I think they're all really close. So you have to look at quality wins to differentiate those teams. That's just my opinion.
Yeah. Now let me give you a chance to win Hal Sparks tickets coming up at Stand Up Live Thursday night. Text into the number 910-663-5663. That's 910-663-5663. You've heard the promo running all week already. Text the phrase in medium. Not small, not large, medium. To 910-663-5663, and you can win a pair of tickets to see Hal Sparks Thursday night. He'll be in studio tomorrow.
What if they went schmedium instead?
It would be close, but I would give the tiebreaker to the person who actually texted in medium.
Ah, okay. Still coming up on the show, Laura Rutledge of the SEC Network, Jason Caldwell of Inside the Auburn Tigers magazine. That's 8:20 and 9:20. We're back with more Cube Show right after this.